you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
What is up, my fellow addicts? Ralph Sutton, the SDR Show. This week, a band that I was so into and was thrilled to find out they're still out there. It is the Nixons. They perform live. The singer is Zach Malloy, and even his kid comes in to play with him. Really cool to get them on the show. We do this every single Wednesday, every single Saturday, and use the code SDR to get 20% off and access to every episode we've ever done and every show on the network, or just listen and share anywhere. We're on YouTubes. We're on anywhere you'd be listening to a podcast. Just spread the love of the SDR Show. But here it is right now, the Nixons episode of the SDR Show.
This is the intro to the shit show. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. This is a hit show. Show me a tit show. Please, someone fuck the hoe. It's weed, I beat, it's hookers and blow. It's art, it's art, you need to know. The SDR Show. Let's go.
It is the SDR Show, sex, drugs, and rock and roll show. As you can hear, my voice is still fucked, but the show must go on, as we say. James Mattern in. You know how bad I am with sports? I don't even know. What kind of hat is that? What, is that a team? I don't know.
Should I just lie? This is Muhammad Ali's hat back in the day when he beat George Foreman. They gave him the... No, it's the Montreal Expos. They don't exist anymore. They're the Washington Nationals. We were all just in Montreal at different times, and I support the people. Look at this hat. It's great. It's going to not get me late.
Nice. I don't know anything about sports, but it looks like it says ELB to me.
It's a lot more complicated. No one really knows what the goddamn thing is, to be quite honest. You ask them, they'll just answer in French, and you're back to fucking around and not knowing shit. So what are you going to do?
Let's introduce our guest. He is a singer, a songwriter. He was on the first Shiprocked that I've not been on in I hosted it for 10 years. I get off, then he comes on. That might tell you something about our relationship. I don't know. We'll find out. He was supposed to be in studio last week, and he broke his hand right beforehand. It is Zach Malloy. How are you, buddy?
Good, man. Can't quite make the rock sound.
Oh, Jesus.
Let's just start with that. How did that happen? Let's talk about that.
Oh, man. So thanks for having me. The Nixons are back after about a 17-year hiatus. And we always put on a pretty high energy show back in the day. We try to do so now, even though I'm not in my 20s anymore. Mm-hmm. And we were in somewhere on Long Island, Patch Hog Theater. My sound man, knowing that I sometimes will go out and mingle with the crowd occasionally, pointed at soundcheck to an 8-foot deep orchestra pit and said, "Listen, man, tonight, don't be fucking around with the crowd." And I took a step out onto the edge of it, and I slipped and I fell, and I landed 8 feet later on my pinky and my hip and kind of shattered some bones in here, and have a great surgeon in Nashville that fixed me up. And now I'm just in a pain in the ass, kind of a brace for a while. But
how into the set did that happen?
It happened with about 30 seconds left to go.
Oh, okay. Well, that's not so bad then. That's fine.
I popped up out of the pit and I finished the set. I grabbed my phone and wallet, and a buddy of mine drove me to the ER.
Wow, that's crazy. And how's the pain level right now?
There's no pain really right now. It was very painful when it happened, as you would think. But they had surgery 4 days ago, and it'll just have to heal. I got some pins and plates and all kinds of shit in my finger now.
Wow, so it was really bad. It was bad.
Pretty bad. Yeah, this guy works on, like, speaking of sports, he works on Tennessee Titan football players and Predator hockey players, and he said it was the worst one he'd seen, so I should feel proud. Wow. I don't feel proud. I feel fucking stupid, but yeah.
Ralph, what sports do the Titans and the Predators play? Go, well, go,
the
go.
Titans sounds like a football team to me.
Yes. And what about the Predators? Come on. The
Predators sound like basketball.
Shit, goddamn close hockey, but I'm proud of you.
Goddamn it. I knew it wasn't going to be football, but whatever.
Dude, I think it looks cool. What about, do you ever think about putting like stickers or patches on it? Like it's old denim, like jacket back in high school?
That's a really good idea. Yeah, I'll have to do that.
Also, guys, you better auction it off when you get it repaired. You better auction that off.
It actually, I did say to someone, it looks kind of cool. It looks rock and roll. It's black. And then someone pointed out that if you look closely, it actually looks like a Croc. You know, those shoes you really shouldn't wear.
So then you lost all the cool with that.
Yeah, the cool went away.
Right. All right. So now, goddamn, my voice is so fucking shot. Okay, I'm sorry.
No, I like it, man. I'm powering through. So are you.
One of the things that's interesting, we'll get into a bevy of different Zach Malloy stuff, but we'll start with, because I just mentioned Shiprock, okay? In a minute, we'll delve into the world of Zach Malloy, the songwriter, right? But what's funny about it is that there's so many people that know you just as a songwriter and not as a dude from a band called the Nixons, that a band that we've had on the show multiple times, I think it's the singer, Adrian, from Otherwise, sees you on the boat and goes, what the fuck are you doing here? Like, why are you in the stowaways?
Yeah, so this is, you bring up a good point, and it's actually pretty hilarious. So, yeah, I mean, for those that don't know, the Nixons were signed in the 90s. We had a little bit of success and a couple of hit songs, and then broke up, and I became a songwriter. I've had number one songs with Carrie Underwood and Shinedown and Skillet and all kinds of people. And so, yeah, saw the Otherwise boys on the boat. They were scratching their heads. What's happening? The Nixons played a festival in Houston. And on the side of the stage, at one point, I look over and Goodbye June are standing there. The members of Scott Stapp's solo band were standing there because they were just like, what are you doing here? Yeah. So the really cool thing I will say to file under that heading is two things: that my kids are 20 and 22 now, and they never saw me in this spot. So that's pretty cool. It's pretty fun. A youngest son, Jude, who studied music actually at NYU, he came out and guitar teched for us on this last tour that we did. So for them to see it, but then the really funny and cool thing was to play in Nashville, Tennessee on this last Everclear tour we did. 20 songwriter friends were there, just all just doing this the whole time. Like, what are you doing, man?
That'd be a question to ask. Do you think that a lot of comics want to be rock stars, a lot of rock stars want to be comics. Do you think a lot of songwriters want to be singers and a lot of singers want to be songwriters?
Oh, of course, you know, and by the way, they love it. They're big fans of the Nixons and big supporters. I'm talking specifically about a couple of my very closest songwriter friends. I just formed a publishing company with three of my best.
Yeah, we'll get into that too, because that's it's a wild story, but you're getting ahead of it, but it is pretty wild.
It was great to play in Nashville. It's great to play, you know, with my kids, you know, on the side of the stage. It's been a blast, dude. It really has.
I hear a lot of things in researching you, how things are coming like full circle in a lot of ways. Like you just said, your son never got to see you in the Nixons, and now he does. You just finished a tour with Everclear, and your first mention ever in Spin magazine was like in an Everclear article. You get mentioned, so now you're on tour. They were just cool how your life is becoming so cyclical.
Yeah, the article, we had been in Rolling Stone a couple of times, and the Spin article was actually funny. It was an article, yes, about Everclear. And at one point it says, since the members of Everclear are sober, they don't seem to mind members of the Nixons filing in from time to time, stealing their booze. So that was our one mention in Spin magazine about how much we drink. I don't know what that says about us.
It's a gotcha in the magazine. That's all that really matters.
That's right.
So what's wild is that when that record came out, which I think was your first, like, you know, official record on MCA, FOMA came out, which is now 1995. I can't believe how fucking long ago that is. But the song that got really popped was Sister, as you just said. But if I'm not mistaken, that was the third single. It wasn't like the first single out of the gate. You know, there was three songs. It was Happy Song and forget the other. But the third single is the one that made it, which it's amazing to think these days how a label would have so much faith in a band that they would go three singles deep. That would never happen today.
Yeah. I say that all the time to a lot of the young artists that I work with and write with. And I'll take it one step further. The Nixons, you know, we were one of the last sort of quote big record deals, you know, spent a lot of money, too much money on our first record, had a lot of fun, but spent a lot of money. And they released one song to radio with a live video called FOMA. Then they released a song called Happy Song, as you mentioned. A song called Head, full on 2-day video shoot in LA. Then they did Happy Song, which kind of cool. Another full circle moment is Matt Pinfield said the Nixons on 120 Minutes for the first time when he played Happy Song. And I was just saw Matt. He was emceeing a show I did in Oklahoma City a few months ago. So it was, again, this is going to be 10 different full circle stories. But yeah, so to put a finer point on the Sister was the next video, the next single, but MCA didn't even want to spend any money shooting a video. Mm-hmm. So we begged a video director friend of ours, Matt Mahurin, to shoot a video, and he did in his loft apartment in Manhattan. My sister, who was in town working on a movie,
I get it, sister,
held a light and went like this and just walked back and forth while I lip synced the song. He threw in some stock footage of some birds and some kids jumping on a trampoline or some shit, and that's the only video that we got airplay with on MTV regular.
That's crazy. And also, by the way, I was a strip club DJ at the time. And it was like a closing towards the end of the night song for me all the time. It was a big hit in the strip clubs back then.
Feels wrong.
Yeah,
bro.
I know. That's why I liked it. I used to also play "Rape Me" by Nirvana all the time because I thought it was funny.
Whoa. When I was a strip club DJ, sir, I would open with Sister because I'm the antithesis of Ralph, and my throat worked the whole time.
Yeah,
big
mine
shocker.
Doesn't. Yeah, it sucks.
The whole time. That's why it is, baby.
Zach, I will give you credit to my knowledge. For one of the worst first band names of all time, which the name of the band originally was Is That an Animal, was the original name. And then the Nixons actually means nothing, right?
Yeah, Is That an Animal with a question mark, dude? Come on now. Let's go all the way. Yeah, I mean, listen, man, it was a stupid cerebral band name. It was the 90s. You know, what's the movie with Ethan Hawke where his band was something like Who Stole My Bicycle or something
Reality
like that?
Bites.
Reality Bites. Yeah.
We were trying to be, you know, something. But you know, eventually we landed on the Nixons. We always just like to say it's got a big X in the middle of it. It looks cool. And, you know, it worked.
Look at the irony of this right here. Otis Nixon, Montreal Expos, big coked up center fielder. Look at the irony.
That's
of this
what kid. I was going to say. Otis Nixon. That's who I was thinking. Thank you. And even FOMA is like a Kurt Vonnegut thing. Like, you're like a smart guy, huh? Is that the idea? We get it.
Oh man, listen, we have a bunch of songs that are just dumb as hell. But we, you know, I'm a reader. You know, I won't really back down from that. Kind of cool thing, actually, Kurt Vonnegut, my first solo record, I put one of his poems to music and actually got a handwritten note from Kurt Vonnegut approving me to use it. So I recorded a song with Kurt Vonnegut once upon a time in the 90s.
Wow, that's pretty wild. That's cool. So let me ask you, so FOMA, which it means, I think, technically harmful untruths, or basically like, you know, lie, kind of like manipulation and stuff. And then not this EP, but the last EP had a song on there called Lies and had like a lie theme on it as well. So my question is, who's been lying to you your whole life? Who's
hurt you? I don't know what's going on, man. My wife actually asked me, you know, we had a song called Favorite Lies. We've got a song on this new album that's kind of all about, it's called Justified, and it's kind of all about liars. I don't know. Maybe I watch too much cable news. Maybe that's
maybe that's what Oh, Jesus, I'm sorry I'm coughing so much, Shannon, and I can't keep hitting the mute button. I'm doing the best I can. So now, here's where it gets interesting. At some point, the I'll call you guys, because it's not the original lineup, because you had Ty was your first drummer, but we'll call it the FOMA lineup, the lineup that made it, right?
Right.
You break up, and back in is it 97, 98, somewhere in that area, you break up?
Something like that, yeah.
Something like that. And you split up for a long time. We'll get into what brought you guys back in a minute, but at that point, at somewhere along the way, and I believe it's a former guest on this show, Jarrett from Bowling for Soup, reached out to you and asked you to help write a song, which launches this whole other career for you as a mega songwriter. Because not only, you know, as you said before, Carrie Underwood, but then you got these people together where you're called the Four Horsemen of Rock, and you've written songs for Hailstorm, Bad Wolves, Seven Dust. The story behind the Shinedown song, Atlas Falls, is also great. We'll get into that. But the question is, like, A, how did you find that confidence to say, I'm going to do all this? And what do you enjoy more, writing songs for other people or writing songs for yourself?
Oh, dude, I'm the luckiest dude. I get to do it all. I really do. I know that's a cop out of an answer, but I mean, I wrote a song today with a fabulous writer right here down on Music Row, and I enjoyed the hell out of it. And I love that the Nixons are back playing. I got two kids in college, so I'm a bit of an empty nester now, so it kind of worked out. Yeah, Jarrett was a big piece of it. I'll tell you another piece of it. You mentioned the Four Horsemen. The Nixon's third album with MCA, we got that classic, We Don't Hear a Single, flew me to L.A. and to San Francisco to write with two people, Jack Blades from Night Ranger and Marty Fredrickson, who I wrote with in L.A. He was my first co-write, as in I didn't even know co-writers. I didn't know that was a thing. What the hell is this? Marty is now one of the Four Horsemen. 22 years later, my first co-write ever is now my business partner as a songwriter. And it's pretty amazing. One of the other Four Horsemen is Scott Stevens, who was in a band called the Exes that the Nixons took out on their first tour.
I love the Exes.
And then back to Jarrett. Yeah, I mean, he called me, you know, a little bit of writer's block. We wrote. I ended up with five songs on that album. Boom, I got a publishing deal with Sony. And it was really a new thing that was happening. I don't know how much you guys could see under the hood back then, but you know, early 2000s was, you know, producers would say, hey, you know, Dredge, Three Doors Down, Theory of a Dead Man, you know, we need you to go co-write with Zach. Lived in Tulsa that time, moved here 12 years ago and kind of did it, you know, became a songwriter more in earnest. But yeah, Jarrett was a big part of it. Marty was a big part of it. And then I just got lucky that I just kept getting in the room with bands. Slowly but surely that led to Carrie.
I guess the Carrie Underwood, because that song went to number one, right? And that had to give you street cred, I guess, you know, as far as a songwriter. But is this true that in terms of, you know, full circle-ness, that Carrie Underwood's first concert was the Nixons?
She said, I need to break the ice right now and just tell you that my first concert was at Kane's Ballroom in Tulsa, Oklahoma, to see the Nixons. My sisters snuck me in. I kind of love it. We were, for lack of a better thing, pretty big in Oklahoma. I mean, in the Midwest, but we're from Oklahoma. And we were, I mean, when I say the only band to get signed out of Oklahoma during that time period, that's kind of true. I mean, the Flaming Lips kind of don't count to me because they're sort of an anomaly. They're like aliens. But, you know, it was the Nixons, the Chainsaw Kittens, and the Flaming Lips had got major label deals all within the same 5-year period. The other thing that is pretty well known about us in that area is that Dallas sort of adopted us as home. You know, we broke out of that Deep Ellum scene, Toadies, Tripping Daisy, Deep Blue Something. And, you know, we were right there with them. You know, we were opening for Tripping Daisy, then opening for, you know, all those, the Toadies, all those bands. So, yeah, it was a pretty rocking scene, man. I mean, I have to say that whole strip right there, Oklahoma, Texas, it was killing.
All right, before we go any further, have you ever had a friend that has a guy? Nobody could find something, but your friend always has a guy. The guy now is going to be you. That's rockauto.com. When you need anything in the auto parts world, whether you are a guy that likes to work on his own car, maybe you're an auto mechanic, maybe you are a car shop, whatever the case may be, head on over to rockauto.com. They've been in business for 20 years, and they have everything you could possibly need when it comes to auto parts. You're just going to enjoy perusing the site, finding great deals on everything auto parts for whatever car you have, or maybe for a friend as a gift. You go to rockauto.com. If you got a used car, it's probably appreciated in value. The car market is hot right now. So now is the time to keep your car well maintained exclusively at rockauto.com. If you're looking for auto parts, Rock Auto is your guy, and let them know you heard about them on the SDR show. rockauto.com with all the auto parts you need at amazing prices. Let's get back into it.
So when you originally started doing songwriting, the Nixons wasn't a thing. Now the Nixons are a thing. So when you're writing songs, do I decide, hey, I like this too much, I don't want to give it to anybody? Or maybe because a bigger artist comes along, it's better to give it to them because you'll make more money. Like, how do you dance along that needle?
It's a really good question. And it's an ongoing topic with the Four Horsemen, because this is going to be maybe too revealing. I don't know. But first of all, Yeah, man. I mean, sorry, but I've got folders of titles and concepts. And when I was on, you know, my Zoom right with Shinedown, trust me, that the A-list folder was the one that got used. Hailstorm, same thing. Aaron Jones have a couple songs on his upcoming thing. And then I don't know if this will make sense, but I had this title floating around forever called Kaleidoscope. And I'm just going to be honest, Shinedown's not doing a fucking song called Kaleidoscope. I don't think. So I don't want to say that the Nixons get any sort of leftover, because it's not leftovers so much as it's like, you know, there's another song on the EP called Invisible. And it's this concept I had of like, if I can see you, well, then you're not invisible, you know, so... which that could work for the Shinedown. That could work for any of the bands I worked with. That could work for Tim McGraw or Blake Shelton. But the way I built the song, which is a little weirder lyrically, it is a good question you ask, and unfortunately there's not a real clear answer, because it's just like, this feels right for the Nixons. This is a little bit more, you know, I don't know, ethereal, a little more artsy, you know, so it can't be country, because country has to be very storytelling and very, you know, lyric centric. I don't know if that answered the question, but it's a fun game.
Ahead, you know, Jamie. Who would do a song called Kaleidoscope? I'll tell you that. The Flaming Lips. Go call Wayne right now. He'd do a whole concept album on that one title. You don't have to write the song. Just go here. Hit the title. Have fun with this shit.
But I'm thinking if it's the lips, it's more like Kaleidoscope is a spaceship. Like some weird phrase with that, you know.
Will be the opening line. Can we just get them up? Let's just all have a session right now with the lips. Let's get them back. Come on.
Does it get weird when you see, like, I don't mean this disrespectfully, okay? But the Nixons, while they were popular, were nowhere near the level of, say, you know, a Carrie Underwood or a Hailstorm or any of these huge bands. So when you're writing a song and then you give it to someone else and it becomes enormous, versus if it stays in the Nixon camp, does that feel weird? You know what I'm saying?
It doesn't feel weird, and let me tell you why. You mentioned we just got off tour with Everclear and Fastball, and we played every night. We played the song Kaleidoscope, and it was a blast, and it weirdly went over really well. Like I think people, I don't know why it went over well. Other than maybe it's a better song than I want to give it credit for, but. It was a blast to play that song, right? And at the same time, to get to go to a Carrie Underwood show in an arena as I did a few years back and hear her singing Temporary Home in front of 15,000 people, that's a high, you know, that's right. Amazing. And, you know, Shinedown, you know, playing, they play in my song. And again, in an arena, I have a song on their latest album that's I'm really, really proud of and I'm excited for people to hear. So, nah, man, I'm going to just sound way too happy of a guy, but it's just all good. It's just all fucking good in different ways, you know?
I think of people like Butch Walker and Linda Perry, who we've had on the show, where they have just become synonymous with songwriters. I don't even think Linda just put out her first record in years, but, you know, it's easier, I would imagine, when you're just songwriting, but when you're doing both like you are now in a band and writing for others, it gets murky. In the Nixons, do the other guys contribute? You're like, guys, look, I got this.
Oh, no. The Nixons are very much a democracy kind of in all ways. And so, yeah, we all contribute to the songwriting. In fact, the way it worked on this last album, Jesse, the guitar player, he literally sent me a music bed. I loaded it up in my Pro Tools. I opened a microphone and I just started playing around with ideas. And on the previous EP, Sonic Boom, Ricky sent me like three music beds and I load them up and I play, and then we send it to John, and John's a really, really artistic drummer. He hits hard as hell. John, who's also the drummer for Seether. I do feel that we all, that's the other thing I guess I should have included in my answer about writing with the Nixons, because with writing with the Four Horsemen, it's me, Blair, Daly, who's the other Four Horsemen, and the members of Otherwise or the members of Shinedown or whatever. And you have to sort of be thinking about how this fits into the vehicle that is Shinedown or Otherwise or Stapp or whatever. And with the Nixons, it is a little bit more, I can lean on those dudes to be like, ah, cool. John built a really cool, in the middle of Kaleidoscope, he's got this really cool, I call it the Dream Police section, because it sounds like the middle of Dream Police a little bit. Mm-hmm. And so, that's again, that's a different kind of rewarding, right? It's super badass when you get a call that, you know, you got that song that Tim McGraw liked, it's on his new album. It comes out in 2 weeks. So those are amazing, and it's a different kind of ride. Also, by the way, that's what really pays the bills.
Right, of course.
I'm being totally honest. So
yeah, I also like the idea of like you're having an argument with the guys in Nixon about how to write the song, and you just show them your wall of number one records. You're like, guys, I think we go with my decision.
About that. I've never had to pull that yet, but I'll keep that in my back.
And I love, like, so the song that you wrote for Shinedown, not on the new one, but the last one, wasn't even meant to be a single. It was a giveaway, and then it became number one.
Yeah, man, I get the call, and this happens with songwriters. I wrote that song like 7 years ago, and it didn't make the album. It just, you know, they're like, we love it. It doesn't quite fit with the flow. I think it was the album called Amaryllis, I think is what that was called. And, but wrote it with David Hodges, a fabulous writer here in Nashville, and the band, and it just sat there. You know, I hadn't even thought about this song, to be honest. And I get a random call from my buddy Atlantic, and he goes, "Hey, remember the song Atlas Falls? I need you to sign. Are you cool with this if we do this thing where sell a T-shirt for $50 that has Atlas holding the world up, Atlas Falls lyrics on the back, $50? It goes to frontline COVID workers." This is right in the middle of a pandemic. Yeah. And I said, fuck yeah. And it, by the way, I'll say that little campaign has earned about $700,000 for frontline medical workers.
That's crazy.
That would have been cool enough, but you just said it. I mean, it's because it's Shinedown. I mean, when Shinedown releases a song, basically the world listens, you know? And so the funny part of that whole thing is that I'm actually the one that called. I'm going to bust some people here, but I'm actually the one that sort of informed them. Do you guys know that Atlas Falls is like number 29 this week? Like it entered the charts at like in the high 20s or 30. They're like, what? That's not a single. So
that's so weird. That's so cool though.
It was great. It was great.
All right. So now the Nixons break up, years go by. I think you didn't speak for 16 years or something ridiculous like that. And you get together to do a one-off show. And that was the idea. And somehow it turns into, okay, we don't hate each other anymore. We're going to try and get back together. Was there actual like dissent in the band where you guys were not liking each other, or did you break up just because the music climate changed at the time?
No, it was definitely not a happy breakup. I mean, I should say this. It was a few things. It was definitely some different visions, you know, that whole cheesy, you know, tagline. But also, and this is just me being completely 100%, I had a 2-year-old at home and another one on the way. And I was in fucking Omaha, Nebraska, playing at some shitty dive rock and roll bar. And, you know, I shouldn't say shitty dive bar, because the funny thing about the Nixons when we left is we were able to sell out, you know, 800 to 1200 seats everywhere in the country. And that's an enviable place to be. And in some ways, you know, my buddies in the Toadies, they just kept on going, you know, some of them in the Burton Brothers, some in the Toadies. Jarrett from Bowling for Soup, he's never stopped, man. I mean, and I admire that in those people. For my personality, I wanted to be home. I wanted to be home with my kids. I was discovering that I could maybe be a songwriter. So, right. You know what I mean? So if you had told me it's either this life on the road, or you're going to go home and be, you know, an accountant or something. But the fact that I had an option to be able to, you know, play guitar and make music and, play the occasional writer round. I don't know if you guys know, but the Bluebird here in Nashville is called a writer showcase. And you'll see, I saw the guy that wrote The Gambler there years ago, and it's a pretty amazing. So that was enough to sort of get my juices flowing. But the Nixons got invited to play Edge Fest or show in Oklahoma City starting about 5 or 6 years after we broke up. Mm-hmm. And I can't speak for the other guys, but I can say for me, we toured 300 days out of a year for a decade.
Yeah,
and
for remember me, that. You guys were road dogs. You guys were real road dogs.
The short answer is always no. No. I got no interest in lacing up the combat boots and going back out. And by the way, the other part of it is I didn't want to suck. So when we did those first shows, we did it up. We lit the stage on fire just like we did. I jumped off shit and I dove into the crowd. I'm 50-something now, so I probably shouldn't be. Well, I think that we have proof that I should be, but I don't want to be that sort of retread. Oh, that's the Nixons. They look old, you know? So we still rock out, man. I mean, I'm really proud of us on this last tour we did. We had 30 minutes every night and we gave it hell.
That's great. And then eventually, I guess, whatever you guys were keeping you apart as friends dissipated and you broke bread and you're all cool with each other now, obviously.
That's right. That's right. I tell people that I had about an hour long conversation with each of the three dudes. And by the end of it, sort of buried hatchets. And also, again, I keep the running theme is that I'm old, but you know, you get to a certain age and you're like,
What am I so angry about? This is so stupid. That's how I think about it. I'm 52. And I was like, there should be nobody in my life that I'm thinking about in an angry way. Because why? What's the point of that at this point in my life? It makes no sense.
There's actually one person for me, but I'm not going to tell you guys who.
Come on,
you can't tease.
How dare you?
Come on. I'm a little younger than you guys, so I got a list of 20. But I got about 8 years to catch up. I'm just going to keep taking one off.
They'll slowly evaporate over
Does
time.
Does his name rhyme with Make Meldon?
No, actually, Blake's all good with me, man. No. You're going to get me in trouble.
He's on my list. He's Blake's number five.
Blake's a badass. Blake is from the same small town in Oklahoma I'm from, Ada. I'm actually producing a documentary about Ada.
I wanted to get into that, too. Little Amens, right? I do my fucking homework, Zach. Come on.
You've done very well, man.
Ralph, so, you're doing really good. I don't ever stop the show in the middle. I mean, you won't get the sports analogy, but you're right now like Willis Reed or Paul Pierce. You got injured and you came back and you're still getting us to the goddamn title. And I could have just made up a name. You would have been like Tommy Smith. And you would have been like, oh, great.
I don't know.
You're doing goddamn great, baby.
Your drummer, as you said earlier, is in Seether. So sometimes that I imagine there will be touring conflicts with that. And once in a while, his son will fill in, right? That happens. So you said when you hurt your hand, your son, one of your sons filled in. Does that mean that, I know you have two sons, are they pivoting towards becoming in this industry as well?
So I'm going to shout out my oldest son, Ben, who is getting his master's at Tufts in mathematics and physics, and he just got a job. Wow. So, you know, I got the call of dad. You don't have to pay for me anymore. And I'm super proud of him. I would have been proud if he hadn't quite gotten a job because he's working on his master. He's getting a master's degree. I don't know where his brain came from. Jude, my youngest, is studying music at NYU, composition at NYU. And yes, is an aspiring musician. I would encourage everyone watching this to go listen. His music is great. I co-wrote his last song with a buddy of mine, Nick Wheeler from the All-American Rejects. And,
Now, do you give him a discount on the songwriting costs when you write a song for your son?
Yeah, it's funny. So there's actually, I don't get paid. Like, I don't clock in and get paid as a songwriter. Mm-hmm. I get paid on the back end, royalties, mm-hmm. and I get paid on the front end, but also mostly on the back end. And so, no, it's all equal. We split the song equal, but no, we'll tell you a funny thing about the next generation. Ben, actually, my oldest, got on stage in Boston and played on Sister because I can't play that song. Jude in New York, Ben in Boston. It was pretty fun for me to have kids on stage with me. But the funny thing is, the first time Jackson had to fill in, I did a little run with Sponge a couple years ago, and Seether's schedule, it happened that we'd already booked the gigs, that already been marketed, and John calls me, he's, you know, all sheepishly, dude, I'm so sorry, I can't do these dates, but I have an idea. I know we wouldn't normally want to have fill-ins, but my son Jackson is a badass, and he is a prodigy. I mean, he's just a badass drummer, and so he did that Sponge Run. He actually just did the last couple shows on the Everclear tour because John had to go. Seether had a big incarceration and a couple other shows that they just had over the last few weeks. So the funny thing about my kid, though, this will say something about his confidence level. When he heard Jackson was filling in, he said, you know, Dad, if you ever like lose your voice, I could fill in for you.
Oh, that's cool. Maybe you could fill in for me because I sound like shit.
What's he doing tomorrow at noon?
Yeah.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crow portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery.
By the way, well, in a couple minutes as well, your son and you are going to sing Sister, right? He's going to play guitar for you.
Yeah, the plan was for me to come to New York and sing and play a song and talk to you guys. And I was, to be honest with you, lost in a bit of a haze of pain and probably pain medication. And I plowed through. We got through the final shows of the tour. But no, came home and, as I mentioned, got this thing fixed. And he'll cover for me.
That's cool. So now, again, of an interesting little full circle thing that may or may not be true in my research that I do, right? So your grandfather was a country singer who sang at the Grand Ole Opry, right? That part I know to be true. And it's somewhat of an inspiration for you, how you got into music. But there was a time back in the day where you were on tour with such a great lineup, Soul Asylum, Radiohead, and the Nixons, right? Yep. And is it true that at one point you got to sing Rhinestone Cowboy with Dave on stage to honor your grandfather? Is that whole thing actually happened?
You do your research. Absolutely. Yeah. So this is actually, kind of funny. I tell this story occasionally that, like, I loved Soul Asylum. I came to love Radiohead. This was when they were touring on the Benz tour. So it was actually, they were in the middle. We were the first of three, then Radiohead, and then Soul Asylum. And you know, a thing that happens at the end of the tour is some nights, you know, the headliner will pull up one of the openers to sing. And I actually got up and sang The Boys Are Back in Town for the last 3 weeks with Everclear, which was really just a blast. But so I loved Soul Asylum. I loved Runaway Train. I loved Black Gold. Loved that album. And so, yeah, the funny part of the story is that they call me over to the bus and they're like, we want you to jump up tonight on stage, final night of the tour. And I'm thinking, oh, fuck yeah, verse two of Runaway Train. They're like, we want you to do Rhinestone Cowboy. I was like, ah, shit. But
that's
no.
That's so funny.
It's actually all cool because it was a cool full circle moment. And, as luck would have it, I did grow up in small town Oklahoma. And by osmosis, you can't not know country music. So I did kind of know the song. Funny thing about Boys Are Back in Town is that Art says to me, we're watching Fastball, and he goes, hey, get up on verse two of The Boys Are Back in Town. And you just have to say yes to Art. If you've interviewed
him on the show, he's been on the show. Yeah.
You know why. And so I don't really know that. So, I mean, I know the song, but I immediately put my headphones on. I start just pacing back between the buses, listening to The Boys Are Back in Town like 100 times. And I think I pulled it off. It was fun.
That's pretty cool. So now, James, you want to ask something? I'm sorry.
So you jump on to sing Rhinestone Cowboy. Does Tom York get the invite too? Because that would be, to me, I'll go scour the internet to find footage of him. I mean, and probably how uncomfortable he would be to sing the goddamn song.
Never happened. And I'm almost certain they just knew not to ask.
That's funny. That's great. Now, let's move into the new record. It's a new EP, Kaleidoscope, which just came out. The single, first one, it's kind of like about how broken pieces come together and could still be beautiful, right? It's what I take from it. My favorite song on the record was the last one, called Dead Electric, which I think is just an amazing song.
Thank you, man.
How does it feel to get back into the Nixon's head to start writing Nixon songs, to make them feel like Nixon songs, but it is 17 years later, whatever it is, to still try and sound like, oh, this could still be somewhat contemporary?
Yeah, that's another thing that we talk about a lot in this band, because listen, you know, we just mentioned some of the bands that I have cuts with. Shinedown couldn't sound more 2022. I mean, more rock 2022, if you know what I mean. The Nixons were from the 90s. I mean, we shouldn't be trying to pretend to be something we're not. However, I'd like to think my songwriting's better. I'd like to think the guys are better. I'd like to think we know each other better. I can say this, and hopefully it won't come across as arrogant. I work my voice hard. I work out every night. My wife just rolls her eyes when I start singing Mommy Made Me Mash My M&Ms. I mean, I try to work hard.
What? Because
it's a warm up. I don't want to suck. I mean, again, this is the thing I brought up earlier, that, like, You know, it would be easy for us to, I mean, to dial it in. It would be. We get right. asked to play big shows. We could fly in, cash a check, and stand there and play our songs. But I don't want to do that. I would rather just not do the Nixons. I'd rather just go play some acoustic solo shows and have that be it. But so yeah, it was cool to get in that headspace production-wise. We talked a little bit about the lyrics, but Dead Electric is another one that, like, this is
great
another
song. It is a great song.
Thank you, man. It's another one that I actually went to Blair and I'm like, I have a title, Dead Electric. Do you think we would ever use that with one of the bands we worked with? And he just politely said,
that's
no,
funny.
I
that's
doubt
really
it.
Funny.
But I will say, I will shout out one of the lyrics in that. I was watching the beginnings of this Ukrainian thing. And a little lady, like a grandma, walked up to a soldier with a handful of sunflowers and said,
I saw that. That was great.
Put these in your pocket. That way flowers will grow over you and people will know where you died.
Right.
And so the bridge of Dead Electric, see if I can get it right. Put seeds in your pockets and fly and say goodbye. So flowers grow over you on the day you die. So I directly lifted some old woman in Ukraine for my bridge on Dead Electric. And I'm glad you say you like it, because it was one that the title was a little bit questionable amongst the band, of like, what does it mean? Do you know what it means? And you know,
I have a question. Will you be giving that elderly woman points on the back end?
Absolutely not, dude. That's all me.
All right, fair enough.
Send her some bread.
Then you probably could use the bread.
Some bread. Yeah. Wow.
Give her some bread. That's your payoff, miss. Thank you for that.
So you mentioned this a title, Little Amens, is a song you wrote a while ago that now is the title of a documentary about your hometown. And like you said, Blake Shelton came from there as well, and a few other bands. When is this documentary coming out about this town?
Well, I mean, to be honest with you, people that follow me on social media will probably see a trailer. I just saw the first trailer, the second trailer, that's a little bit more connective with what the documentary is about. And just, you know, not to do a deep dive in it, but it is kind of uncanny how many people in the music business over the years are from Ada, Oklahoma. Mae Axton, who wrote Heartbreak Hotel and many other hits. Hoyt Axton, her son, who wrote Joy to the World, Never Been to Spain. Dwayne O'Brien, who was the founding member of Little Texas. Fiddle player for Garth Brooks for 20, 30 years. Myself, there's a jazz trumpet player. It's won like 8 Grammys from Ada, wow. Oklahoma. The original title of the doc was like What's in the Water, Something in the Water. I wrote this song, and one of the other producers heard this song. I wrote Little Amens, and we changed the title to that because it's sort of, we've sort of come to the conclusion with, you know, if you ask the question, why so many people from Ada, just the answer is the little tiny happy accidents that happened along the way, that I met this guy, that I had this music teacher, that I saw that this guy went and formed a band that got a major label deal. And it wasn't as if I said, like, out loud, oh, if he can, if she can, I can. But there is something that must be in my brain of being like, or maybe I'm just dumb enough to just think, yeah, someone should sign me to a record deal. And the Nixons did work hard to get to that point. So it's not as if it was some magic thing, but that documentary is going to be really cool and special. There's a lot of really cool things that are brewing.
Do you know the population of Ada by any chance?
14,000.
Right, because when I was in Iceland, they have Iceland, because it's such a small country. It's like, I think, 250,000 people.
Yep.
Let's say 300 for the easy math. They won Miss Universe 3 times, right? And if you figure 50% of the population male, 50% female, that's 150,000 women. All of those Miss Universes were alive. So that meant in Iceland, one out of every 50,000 people is a Miss Universe, which is a crazy statistic, right? And they also have the most for per capita Nobel Peace Prizes. They won one, but it's one per 250,000 people. So one per 250,000 is a very high number. So I wonder what the statistic is for the population of Ida versus becoming famous.
Yeah, man. We're the Iceland of southeastern Oklahoma.
there you go.
That's got to be the bumper sticker. Just get it done. Get it done, Zachy. Yeah, let's go, baby.
All right, I have last two questions. Then you're going to perform live. Then we'll do the first. And then I'm going to shut up for about 24 hours. Number one, is it true that you are related to Jesse James?
It is absolutely true. Not just Jesse, but his brother Frank. Yes, there is a little bit of outlaw somewhere in my blood, and I'll tell you for damn sure, my kid Jude, he's definitely related to Jesse James.
How did you find that out? Is that a story that was passed down, or did you actually do the research?
My grandma, and it was probably framed. She was a pretty tough lady from another small town in Oklahoma called Wewoka, and it was probably said to me something like, "You ain't nothing but trouble, like your great great grandfather Jesse James." Probably was worded to me like that.
That's pretty cool. I like that story. And now also, is it true that your first tour manager was Van Halen's tour manager?
Amazing stories, dude. I loved it. He actually was handpicked by David Lee Roth to be his only traveling partner. I don't know if people remember this. I read Roth's biography, so I knew about this, but he wanted to navigate the Amazon River from the bottom. I guess it's a different kind of challenge to do it from whatever. So Paul Silvera was our tour manager, and he was halfway up, and they pull off to get supplies, and David Lee Roth gets a telegram that says, "Us Festival," or "Come home, Us Festival, 1 million per man." And so they headed home. So,
oh, that's fucking great. That is a great story. I would come home immediately myself.
Absolutely.
All right. So now we're going to have you play with your son. You're going to do sister, and then we'll end up with the first.
1, 2, 3, 4. Here I am again. Overwhelming feelings. Thousand miles away from your ocean home. Part of me is near. Thoughts of what we were in vain. Miles that stand between can't separate, no. You're all I hoped you'd become. Yeah. Sister, I see you dancing on the stage. Fleeting visits pass, still they satisfy. Reminders of the next overshadowed goodbye. All flames burn as one. Sister, I miss you. Oh, intertwined, you and I. Our souls speak from across the minds intertwined, you and I. Our blood flows from
that was awesome. Thank you so much, dude. So now we're gonna just do the first. We'll play add a song to the plates and wrap this up.
The first time ever I saw concert Detroit's had sex.
The name of the show is the SDR Show, Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll Show. We ask everybody this since the dawn of time, their first experience with all three. We start with rock and roll. The first concert you went to on your own volition. I know that you said hearing Fool in the Rain by Led Zeppelin is what inspired you to really get into rock music, but what was the first concert you actually went to?
Yeah, it was Fool in the Rain. I remember the car that I was sitting in, older brother, you know, friend's older brother, Fool in the Rain. I was at Kmart the next day buying or maybe shoplifting every Led Zeppelin album. Concert, I got a good story for this too, man. So the Nixons get signed. And I, again, small town Oklahoma, dad, part-time Southern Baptist minister, pretty religious growing up. We have these meetings at MCA at the very beginning where they're sort of coaching us, right, to do interviews and stuff. And they say, I suppose in preparation for this very interview, okay, John, what was your first concert? Kiss. Jesse, first concert, Black Sabbath. Ricky, something else cool. Zach, first concert, Amy Grant and Michael W. Smith. And the girl across the table looked at me and just shook her head and said, don't ever say that again.
That's really funny.
And what was your first concert? And I said, oh, Van Halen, 1984. And I mean, truly, man, I mean, I'm not, this will sound a little corny, but just seeing David Lee Roth on stage and being like, whoa, man. Is there any chance I could be some version of that? Yeah, that was it.
Did you ever get to meet him along the way?
I've met David along the way and Eddie, yeah, along the way. And never any meaningful like hang time. But, you know, interestingly, you talked about the breakup of the Nixons. At the very end of the Nixons, there were no original members except myself. And our drummer was actually Ray Luzier, who's currently the drummer for Korn. Right. And he played in David Lee Roth's solo band. So that's kind of how I met David a couple times. And yeah, just a massive fan of Van Halen and the live show.
There was a time when I told you earlier, I was a strip club DJ. And there was a big club in New York that I was DJ at. And he would come in with Nile Rodgers and come up. I would play a lot of disco back then because that was the crowd was in their 40s and 50s. And at that time, that was their coming of age music. So you played a lot of disco. And David Lee Roth came into the DJ booth, sat down and talked with me for about 2 hours.
Wow.
All about his love of disco and how he lost the rights to the radio in the tour bus in the early Van Halen days. And then I told him how all my friends were such huge fans. And he was calling friends of mine, but before cell phones. So he was leaving voicemail messages. He drew something for a friend of mine. Like he could not have been fucking cooler. It was great.
That's so good to hear when those stories happen that way. What was the club? Just out of curiosity.
It was called Stringfellows Presents Pure Platinum. Okay. Pure Platinum ended up being a chain all around the country for a while. All right, so what about the first drug you ever did after weed, unless weed wasn't your first drug?
Man, gosh, I'm really going to be a letdown. I haven't really done anything. And when the first time I smoked weed and then tried to sing and could not sing, And I was far enough down the road of thinking I wanted to do this for a living. I wanted to be a singer in a rock and roll band. And if I can't sing, then I can't fucking smoke that shit. Right, so right. Not to say that an occasional, you know, chewy something doesn't happen in these days. But the Nixon's always joked about how we had a tour manager we had to fire because he was doing coke, and I never even saw him and never even knew he was doing it. We were pretty naive. I will say this, that we had a writer that was pretty alcohol heavy. So it was late nights, 7 a.m. Okay, Zach, crawl in your bunk. Interestingly, we did a tour. MCA Records got bought at one point by the Seagram's Corporation, and we did this tour called the Seagram's $7 Bill Tour with two other bands. And at the Whiskey, at the first night, they load up the bottom of our bus with, this is what Seagram owned at the time, maybe still do, Absolute, Seagram, just cases of vodka, cases of Seagram's, cases of Patron, which I ended up giving to family members for Christmas for years later. And my line to the president of MCA and one of the CEO, one of the guys from Seagram's was, so you're doing this now. Are you going to cover Betty Ford when the tour's over?
Great line.
So, yeah, no, we held our own with you know, maybe not Bowling for Soup, but most rock bands out there.
And what about the first time you had sex?
Well, I'm just going to say, on a hill somewhere on the hood of a Monte Carlo. And that's all I'm going to
do. Leave it. The imagery great. There. The that's songwriter in you created a nice imagery.
That's great. In Oklahoma, this is the best. This is the most warm answer we've ever gotten.
Yeah, that's for sure.
This is
so
great.
The EP is called Kaleidoscope. The Nixon's official, at the Nixon's official on Instagram. I love that. That song, Get Electric. I tell people, go listen to that. Is there anything else you want to plug before we go around the room?
Nah, man, you guys have been great. It's a really great interview. I really have enjoyed it. And sorry I didn't get to see you guys in person. But next time we're in New York, I'm in New York a lot. You know, I'll be moving my kid back into his apartment. Just moved him out of Chinatown a few weeks ago. So
I'll be back up there. That's very near our studios. We're in East Village, so right by.
Let's just keep in touch. But I really do appreciate you guys taking the time and getting the word out about the band and the EP.
How do you like my 400 cough breaks during this interview? Did you find that exciting?
Again, dude, I mean, your partner there mentioned a few athletes. I'll just say, go look up the Michael Jordan, you know, 102 degree fever game. I mean, listen.
Which was fucking
You played through the pain.
Right. Look at you, your champ, Jordan. You got compared to Jordan.
James, your plugs, please, James.
Yo, man, I just released the Michael Jordan of Unique Specials. It's called the Goddamn Check Spot. James Mann, the Check Spot. I recorded during the worst part of the show when people pay their bills and no one pays attention. Go watch the special on YouTube, the Check Spot, James Mann, black and white interviews. It looks like a 90s rock. It almost looks like Funky Monks by the Chili Peppers, but comedy when no one pays attention and me giving them the business. Check that out. And I'll be opening up for Chris DeStefano. Go to his website. I'll be doing those theaters in the Midwest with him and Philly and Baltimore and all that cool shit and New Year's in Long Island. What up?
All right. That's nice. Shannon, your plugs.
You can follow me on Instagram at ShannonLee6982 and listen to my podcast, The Thing Is Ding. We talk about bad dates, fighting, and ghosts. We have all sorts of interesting guests come on, comedians, musicians, reality TV stars, porn stars. I have to switch the order in which I say those things because I can never say it clean in one shot. And they tell their own personal stories about a bad date that they experienced, a time they got into a street fight, and an experience with the paranormal.
Okay, now, Zach, do not indicate in any way when I'm about to ask you, don't even bat an eyelash.
No.
Does Zach Malloy believe in ghosts is the question. We all need to chime in. Last night, Jay killed it when we did on the show live. It was amazing. But Shannon, what do you say?
Yes.
James?
I'm going, nah.
I'm going yes, because he comes from some small town. There's going to be a lot of weird mythology there. So I think yes. Zach, is it yes or no?
I'm just going to say this. I do believe in porn stars.
There it is. I win that one. That is a fucking wink. That's a dog whistle to your boy. I win this one, baby.
Follow me everywhere at I Am Ralph Sutton. Hilariously, I have a podcast on health and wellness, which I am the antithesis of that right now. But it's called Good Sugar. The store is opening in September on the corner of 3rd and 69th Street. Feel free to come down once we open. We add a song every week to our playlist, thesdrshow.com/playlist. We're going to add Dead Electric because it is my favorite song on the record. And everyone else, thank you for dealing with hearing me sound like I'm about to die.
You're a winner, Ralph.
I'm going to go take a nap for hopefully 24 hours. And thank you, Zach, for being a part of this.
Thank you, guys.
Like hell, I'm on the front line with no gun, my own enemy, but I'm not the only one. Dead electric, dead electric, yeah. Dead electric, dead electric, yeah. Got no moments left to hold. Got no diamonds in the mines. The taxes are taken, we've all been burned. We're running to the cliff. Will we ever learn? Your heart and carry on.
silence after the song.
Listening to the SDR Show.